Oh, hey. Today we are going to discover how turning empathy into action can transform stress into strength and conflict into connection. With our guest today, Janine Johnston, an expert in implementing resilience and compassion practices. Welcome, everybody, back to another episode of Men Talking Mindfulness.
Raw, uncut, and unapologetic. Welcome to Men Talking Mindfulness.
Yes, we are back, and today we're going to dive deep into the world of emotional, mental, and social resilience and explore actionable strategies and stories that will empower you to overcome adversity and thrive in life. John is over there. Janine is here. Thank you both for being here and growing this conversation that we are Men Talking Mindfulness. And John, what do you get? What else you got? How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks, brother. And Janine, good to see you. Good to have you here with us. And for our audience, for our community, we're excited to get into this conversation. We know we've covered some similar stuff here, but this is, as we're going to cover today, but this is something that I don't think can be covered enough. We've got to beat this drum and really get the message across to everyone. Listen, yeah. Our listeners, our watchers, their friends, their family. So here we are. But I also know that Janine is going to offer some brand new insights as well. So no pressure, Janine. I will just kick it off with one announcement. it's pretty easy these days to find me and Will. If you can just text the letters MTM to 33777. If you just text MTM to 33777, you will see everything that we are doing, everything that we're up to. And you can sponsor the show to help us grow the show, but more importantly, to help us further the mission that we are on. And that is to open people's hearts and minds to all these things that are connected to or associated with mindfulness and meditation. So again, if you want to help us out or find anything else that we're involved in, text MTM to 33777. All right. So that all said, I'm going to kick this off with one breath, with a one breath. Breath grounding practice. So go ahead and get comfortable, whatever that looks like for you. And let's just begin by exhaling, emptying our lungs, emptying, 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 holding empty for a second. Nice deep breath in. Noticing how that breath feels, noticing yourself in the here and now, holding full at the top and letting go. And here we are. All right. Well, again, thank you, Janine, for being here with us today. We're excited to get in this conversation, and we're going to kick it off just to lay the foundation, because what we've actually started doing, Will and I have started cutting down on the bios, because we've started to see that people tune out if we spend too much time on the bio. So we're going to allow you to tell us a little bit more about who you are, what got you into what it is you're doing, and why our audience should listen to you on this topic. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Great, thank you. Well, I am the mother of two girls, which I think is really what brought me to this work, because I believe that we're on an intergenerational journey, and the way that I grew up wasn't necessarily how I wanted to raise my own children, and I was a single mom eventually. So that's what really got me to put my rubber to the road, figure out how to do this differently than I had been. One of my kids also has a learning difference. She has severe dyslexia. So I really wanted to show up for her in a different way. I learned how to work with kids who have dyslexia and have been doing that for about 10 years, teaching kids how to read. But what I noticed was they had a lot of anxiety that was unexpected. I identified it as ADD a lot of the time, but it's really just anxiety. I want to be with all the other kids and I can't keep up. Mm. So that was my toe in the water. And then through COVID, I realized I want to spend more time with adults. And that's what's been bringing me, and it started before that. I want to bring mindfulness and self-compassion to people of all sorts. So I've been bringing it to nonprofit organizations, to corporations, to mental health organizations, to realtors, you name it, I can find a group and figure out what the pain is and then how to lean into it with resilience. And just as an example, John, in your introduction with that one breath, I work with kids. Sometimes I did a social emotional learning day at a school this year, and we did some box breathing.
Nice.
And I taught them the box breathing, and I said, this is what first responders do. And at first we had to define, what's a first responder? Oh, right. People who go into those burning houses, people who go into where the shots are. And before they go in, they do this breath, right, to calm their nervous systems. And, you know, just bringing that to young people, they're like, oh, wow, this isn't woo-woo shit. This is really
cool. Right, right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, so, I talk about that regularly as well. Is you know, my background is military, and when somebody told me originally that I should practice mindfulness and meditation to deal with the anxiety, the stress, the pressure, I laughed at them. But then I realized that we had actually been doing breathing exercises in the military. We had been doing tactical breathing, is what we called it. And it is box breathing. I mean, it's slightly different, but it's essentially box breathing. And that was great for us. But then noticing that I'd already been doing it for all this time, just at least the simple breath work, not so much the deep intrinsic or introspective work, but yeah, the breath work. When I realized it, I was like, okay, maybe it's not as woo-woo as I perceive it to be.
Wow. Well, tell me, I think it's interesting, Janine, you know, so where were you as a mother, as a parent, before you kind of learned these skills? Like, what, you know, how would you approach your children? You know, because you mentioned there's kind of, you were one place and then now you're another. So, you know, what was that like? What were the parent before and now, how do you parent differently?
Yeah, well, we'll go back to high school. I was that student who did everything. I was the type A, I'm going to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning getting my homework done. I want straight A's. My dad paid me for A's. And that was my ticket to getting attention. So, you know, I will be an excellent student and I want to be seen for doing the right thing and really knowing a lot. And I want to go to an important college. And what I didn't know was inside of me, there was this really loud and very mean voice that was like, if you don't stay up and if you don't get those A's, you will be invisible. You won't belong. You know, I didn't know all that stuff. Right. So when I became a mom and my own child was not thriving in school, and her dad is also a quantum physicist, so also used to doing pretty well in school, and she was not doing well. We were mean to her, to be honest. We were mean because our ego is manifested in this child, right? And this child isn't showing up the way we think they have to. She had to show up in order to belong in the group, to be okay. And wow, it's taken me a journey to figure out she is inherently wonderful. No matter what kind of grades she gets, no matter how she reads, she is the most wonderful manifestation. She's a human being and she is, you know, my own little human being that I helped to create. But regardless, you know, we got off to the wrong start with this little being. And so I have a lot of guilt and shame around that journey that I'm still working through. But learning how to show up for my children and has been directly related to how I show up for myself because of that ego extension that our children manifest.
Well, yeah. What's the difference? Like, so how do you approach, instead of, you know, shaming her and, you know, making her probably feel really bad and more anxious, what's the approach? You know, what was the shift in the approach? You know?
Yeah. So one part of that is recognizing the human negativity bias. We're always homing in on what's not going right. And so much is going right. So now I'm a detective of what is going right. And whenever I see things that she's doing well, it's being very specific about amplifying that. But it's also having this ongoing conversation. Tone of voice is super important. Warm, loving, sometimes motivational and fiercely compassionate. But this, the tone I have to focus on. And then using lots of kind words and just all kinds of nicknames and ways that I can lean into making her know that she's got secure attachment with me. No matter what she does, I'm here for her. And I'll help her when things are rough, and and I'll be there for her. But it's also what I'm a coach as well. And it's about letting her figure out her own way too. And that could be really hard as a parent, just asking probing questions and letting her learn to guide herself with her own correct, you know, whatever's right for her. She's on her own life path.
Well, how has that, how has that changed your relationship? I know, I'll keep going, John. How has that changed your relationship to her? You know what I mean? Because it's also like what you're speaking of here, it's like, you know, the way that you're speaking to your child is probably the way you're going to be speaking to yourself as well. You know what I mean? Or like anyone that's listening, it's like, you know, the way that you're relating to others is the way you're ultimately relating to yourself and to begin with. So how did that change your relationship between you and your daughter?
Well, we are in a process, right? She's known me in another way longer than she's known me in this new way. So she is continuing to wake up to my awakening, if that makes sense. And I've been doing internal family systems, journeys, whatever I can do to really strengthen and root my own sense of that deep relationship that I have with myself. And so she's testing it. Are you going to show up like you used to? Or are you going to show up in this new way? And I get to relax into this new way of being, this calm, wise way of being again and again. And we're just in that process. It's not a switch. It's a process.
Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. Great.
You know, I'm a parent, and I've got three little ones. They're still young, and something that I saw quite a while ago in a meme is that, you know, your parents are doing the best they can, or your parents did the best they could. And we as parents, it is a learning experience, a learning process in and of itself, right? Yes, I know there's hundreds of books out there, but nothing is going to come and actually cover your experience like your experience does, right? And that you have learned that the way that you showed up for your daughter originally wasn't what was best for her, and wasn't what was best for you either. And you talked about having some guilt and shame around that. And then Will mentioned the fact that you may talk to her the same way that you talk to yourself. I've always found that I talk to myself much more harshly than I talk to anybody else. And since we're talking about compassion, and you mentioned self-compassion before, let's define what self-compassion is, or compassion as a whole. I mean, we talked about it when we were in the green room before we actually went live, that a lot of people don't know what compassion truly means. And I know Will's an ambassador for compassion from Stanford. You've got a lot of background in compassion, obviously, hence your being here on the show. But could you define what compassion is, first of all, then kind of unpack self-compassion, and then maybe let's come back to that piece where you were talking about feeling that guilt and shame about your parenting before, and how you could offer yourself, or somebody listening could offer themselves, some self-compassion for the way that they may have parented in the past. I know that was a lot. Hopefully you can digest all that.
Yeah, let me take some notes. We'll find our way. All right. So compassion. Compassion is the recognition that suffering is going on. That's where the mindfulness comes in. And then the will to alleviate it. And that's where the action comes in. Self-compassion is that directed inwardly, or as the program that I teach, the 8-week mindful self-compassion program by the Center for Self-Compassion, designed by Kristen Neff and Chris Germer, we define it as treating ourselves as we would treat a best friend, a dear friend. And so one of the first things that we do is recognize. We do an exercise where our friend is suffering, going through something rough, and we recognize what we say to them, what tone of voice, if we use any soothing action, supportive actions for them. And then we imagine ourselves going through a rough situation that similarly, and what do we say? What's the tone of voice? And do we do anything? So that's pretty universal. That's a human trait that we often speak to ourselves. And I think it's cross-cultural. We speak to ourselves in a way that we would never speak to another person until we become aware of it. So then how does that, I mean, that applies in everything we do. That applies in being a parent, that applies in our workplaces, that applies to leadership, that applies to schools, that applies to teen suicide, so much. Yeah. Did I get all the parts there?
I mean, I think the piece that I just wanted to touch on a little bit more maybe is as a parent who is experiencing some type of shame for the way that they have parented, because I know I've lost my temper, and I mean, Will and I have done episodes on managing your temper. That's one of the big reasons I practice mindfulness and meditation, is to manage my anxiety, which is often the cause of my temper. So much so that I'm embarrassed to admit this a little bit, but my young daughter, she's 7 years old, and recently she's like, "Daddy, what is it that you do for money?" Like, right? Because my wife's an orthopedic physician assistant, and she goes and fixes bones. And here I am teaching people mindfulness meditations. And she said, "So you basically teach people to not get angry?" And I said, "Yeah." And she was like, "Well, that's funny, because you get angry." I was like, "Oh, damn it!"
My accountant says, "Oh yeah, you just sell air, Will."
BS meters.
Right. Oh my gosh, such big time BS meters.
Oh god.
But you know, I definitely, again, even with everything that I teach and practice, I still do have this shame about losing my temper, and. I want to discuss how can we offer ourselves. Now, I'm not saying, hey, let's give ourselves excuses and say, hey, we can just go lose our temper all the time. But how can we give ourselves grace or that compassion for mistakes that we have made in the past and mistakes that we are working to fix?
Yeah. So the three tenets of mindful self-compassion as identified by Kristen Neff are recognizing that we're in a moment of suffering. So our kid does something and it's not what we would like them to do, right? As an example. The next is other people like me in this situation would also be suffering. So we could tap into other dads like me, other moms like me in this situation would also be suffering here. This would be hard for them too, because our brain tells us we're all alone. We're the only one who's ever been through this. So we override mindfulness. And the third is we offer ourselves kind or motivational fierce words in that moment, depending on what we need. So we say, "Oh man, it really does. It feels so awful that our kid did that thing that we don't want them to do, you know?" And we might even put our hand on our heart. We can use a fist or we can use a flat hand. We can put it on our core and or our leg, our face, wherever it feels good. I know of a kid with autism who puts it right on his forehead. And at that moment, we start to physiologically soothe ourselves. And as we soothe ourselves, then we have more options, right? It's that space between stimulus and response. So those are the three pieces of self-compassion. The other person who was involved with designing this mindful self-compassion course, Chris Germer, talks about how he was a Harvard professor in clinical psychology. And he was asked to give a speech in front of other people at Harvard. And he was terrified. He was a terrible public speaker. So much about ourselves and our past relationship to our parents, our attachment comes out in public speaking, right? He was absolutely terrified. He had 7 weeks or something to get ready. And he suddenly realized that what he had, he thought he had an anxiety disorder, but what he had was a shame disorder. And what he means by that is that in his childhood, the way that, and he hasn't really said it this way, but this is my understanding. In his childhood, the way that he related, especially to his father, he's talked about that, is that his father would use shame to get him to comply with what his dad thought he should do. And so that kept showing up, especially when he had to prove his mettle, right, to show up for other people. And so what he has discovered is that self-compassion is the antidote to shame. When we can relate to ourselves with that kindness, oh, buddy, yeah, this is hard. This is right. Really hard. Then we have other options. And the other piece is about anger and knowing that anger is a secondary emotion. Right. And underneath of it, there are softer emotions like I'm feeling hurt right now. I'm feeling unheard, unseen, unappreciated.
Overwhelmed.
And then under that is, right. As a parent, that's a big one. And then under that, what is my unmet need? What is my unmet need? Because there's an unmet need. And when we can identify what we need in any moment, that is the core of having self-compassion. And then all that takes practice again and again and again, just like going to the gym or whatever else we got practice
doing. And one thing that helps with that practice is like, because sometimes, you know, we hear this self-compassion, we talk about self-compassion very often on the show, and we've even like teach it. We actually had Dr. Neff on the show, and she actually did a self-compassion meditation for us. But we really don't have, she's wonderful. I mean, I love her books. Like I listen to her audio book. Oh, she's just really great. I mean, wow. And she has her own struggles too with her family as well. I mean, so she's really always an exercise, you know, kind of exercising this. But like to get to this place of like, you know, rescuing yourself through self-compassion is like also, and we have to catch those thoughts. And, you know, what we need to do first is like really slow down, right? This is why we always talk about the breathing. We always talk about like practicing your breath so you have the opportunity to kind of open up the door to shift your perspective, right? And begin to leverage these other practices that are very helpful to alleviate our suffering and to not just for ourselves, but we can be better with our family, better at work, better, you know, other people. But it really takes that like, we have a lot of men that listen to the show, and like the first one of the first things anybody needs to do, but men especially, to let go of it's just slowing down. Like, what does it take to slow down? And when you slow down, you can you have this opportunity to kind of catch these habits, if you will, of yourself, and that's really so much what they are. And so it just thank you for sharing all that. I mean, really. It does make such a big difference, you know, because we're not going to be able to catch those thoughts if we're not calm or more relaxed. And, you know, that, I don't really have a question right now, but,
I love that. But last couple weekends ago, I went away on a camping trip. It's just starting to become spring here. And we went out nice and early and stayed in northern New Mexico in this tiny little town with adobe homes that have these little agricultural plots that reach down to a little river that's burgeoning with water right now. It was gorgeous to be out there. And I went with my partner who is, and I, you know, I love you. We went out there. He's a CEO of a company. He has about 50 employees. He's a psychiatrist, and he has a number of people working on severe mental illness in his clinic. Mm. And he's also a single dad. And so slowing down is not something that he knows about, right? One of my most precious parts of my path is retreats. And I know you guys are having one coming up, but going away and sitting down and being quiet and moving slowly is a life-changing experience. Yeah. My partner has yet to do that other than little retreats that I've organized for us. So we went away and we had 2 days to just sit in some willows and walk around a very small place. He's a runner, loves to be, you know, getting it out there. And we were just quiet and slow. And it was mind-blowing to him. And it's mind-blowing to me. But I have to be disciplined to make the time to slow down. Because when you're in the rat race, when you're running around like we are told we have to do. That sounds a nice idea, but I don't have time for that. And actually, we have to have the discipline to be able to slow down. And making time for retreats is actually, I think, a responsibility to to our kids, to other people that we work with, to the planet. It is so important for us to make times and tap into that slow down time to know, in order to actually understand what it means.
And those retreats are fantastic. Obviously, Will and I believe in them. We run them. We've been to them. Retreats are fantastic, but we also have to make time in our day to make little miniature retreats, right? I sometimes just take a break from the computer and literally lay on the floor in my office with my feet up on my yoga ball and just for 5 minutes. And that's a little mental retreat for a second. And we talked about society is what tells us that we need to go, and we need to be in this rat race, and we need to have more stuff than the just that more stuff than the Joneses, right? We're keeping up with the Joneses, but now with the internet, we're keeping up with the whole world. Something that I sent Will this morning, if you haven't seen it yet, it's in Slack, and I always mess up his name, but is it Sadhguru?
Sadhguru,
I saw one where he says, the biggest sickness on the planet is everybody trying to be special. And I know, it blew my mind, which, I have totally felt that. I've been like, hey, I need to validate my existence. I need to achieve more. I need to do more and more and more. And I think people get lost in that, attempt to not just outdo the Joneses, but to outdo themselves and continually be special. And when you really take a step back and you realize, you know what? I'm already special. I'm already special for who I am. For the, like you mentioned, right? You were talking about your daughter wasn't doing well enough in school, and then you were getting angry, but then you took a step back and you're like, you know what? She's special because she's my child. She's a child. She's a human being. And when we can give ourselves that grace and understand that we are in fact special already, and yes, other achievements may come and we can still have goals and strive to be, the best versions of ourselves. I'm not saying that we need to go sit in a recliner and veg out all day and say, hey, you know what? I don't need to be anything special. But I think constantly striving to be special and having nothing else in your life, that's a dangerous place to be. And that can also be the reverse of compassion, is when you are not special in your mind,
right?
Then you start to beat yourself up and shame yourself.
Well, thank you for that segue, John.
Yeah.
If I can, is it all right? Well, if I go forward.
Oh, go for it. Yeah, absolutely.
Going back to Kristen Neff, one of the things that brought her to this work was that she was a researcher. She is a researcher, and that's part of her beauty. She won't get ahead of herself, but she was studying self-esteem. And there was back in the 70s when I was growing up and 80s, we were all taught in schools to have self-esteem, right? You got to have self-esteem and you got to teach kids to have self-esteem. And then there was this direct correlation a correlation between teaching people self-esteem and narcissism. So people started studying that. And what they found was that self-esteem teaches us to compare ourselves to other people.
Yep.
I am better than others at this, therefore I have value.
Right.
And we were essentially being taught, especially in the United States, as far as I can see, that we needed to be better than all other people at all other things. And that's impossible. So instead of giving ourselves this quiet value and confidence, we ended up with this sense of never being enough, which makes us very fragile. Yeah. It makes us very brittle and fragile if we have to be better than all others, because we know inside of ourselves, I'm never enough. I've got to do more. I've got to do more. Right. And that's how Kristen Neff got into studying self-compassion. And when the self-compassion research shows that when people show up for themselves with this kindness, using the mammalian caregiverism system to soothe ourselves when things are rough, we're actually stronger. And therein comes the title of this show today, How to Attain Emotional, Mental, and Social Resilience. is actually by relating to ourselves with kindness when things are difficult. And when we can do that, then we're definitely not going to be lazy. We're not going to be weak. We're going to be stronger and more resilient because we're kind to ourselves. And that's what people don't get. My family has a real estate company in Washington, D.C., and I was coming up with this compassionate leadership workshop. And so I talked to the head of the board, and we were talking for quite a while. He lost his parents, and we're talking about that. And then we started to talk about compassion. We finally wended our way around to that conversation. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, my sister is compassionate. Oh, yeah, how is she compassionate? Well, you know, she goes around and she's always like feeling everybody's emotions, and she's always wanting to help people when they're feeling bad. And then it kind of indicated that she didn't feel so great all the time.
Empathic distress, and right?
Definitely indicated. Yeah. He didn't want to do that. I'm not going to sign up for that. No, thank you. I don't want to workshop on how to be like that. No, thank you. And that's, I think, a huge myth in society, and maybe especially among men, is that being compassionate means that you're going to be this bleeding heart that is probably paralyzed by feeling everybody else's emotions. And it's not that. As far as I understand, empathy wakes up our heart. Oh, there is suffering here. I have suffering. Somebody else is feeling suffering. Because I know my suffering, I can feel somebody else's suffering. And then there's that action. And sometimes that action is just showing up with this attitude of, I'm here to listen to you. I don't have any advice, because you know what you need, but I'm just here to listen while you work that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and to pull that story together, like, self-compassion research tells us that if we can show up for ourselves with that kind of attitude in the downtimes, we're much stronger. And it has nothing to do with that self-esteem that we have to be better than others, though it does help us have success and do our best.
Yeah. One thing that I love that we have similar trainings, and, you know, we have similar, you know, people that have trained us, like, I was really woken up to self-esteem. I never really thought of it this way, but I was kind of raised in a household. My dad was always like, hey, be a cut above, you know what I mean? So in like, kind of, I mean, it's important to be kind to ourselves, you know, kind to ourselves, but and like motivate and inspire ourselves. But one thing, the trap with self-esteem, and I know there's, you know, I know there's a lot of 80s kids out there, early 90s kids out there that are now adults and like still in this self-esteem trap. We must compare and even compete or push down other people so we can feel better about ourselves. Like that's the self-esteem trap. And you were talking about with Dr. Neff, it's like that leads to more narcissism. You know, like I need to be the most special. I need to be the one that gets all the A's and doesn't share any of my toys or any of my accolades or whatever. Right. I mean, right. I mean, that is like toxic self-esteem. And then like what you talked about, another distinction I really enjoyed learning was the empathy, right? And the empathy trap where we can get into empathic distress, right? Whereas, and I love that they made like this distinction where it's like, empathy is like, oh, I see that you're going through something right now, right? And I can hold space for you. Like you said, I can listen, I can, you know, and use compassion if you need it in order to kind of alleviate that suffering. Whereas we get into the empathic distress when we jump in the hole with them, take on their feelings, and now we're both feeling the same thing. And we're kind of like locked in this hole of empathy for one another, crying it out with no way out of the hole, you know? So it's like, you know, and a lot of people can do that, you know, just like, oh my God, that's so awful. Oh, and then you take on somebody else's feelings, and then it doesn't help anybody, including yourself. I mean, really good distinctions here, because it's like, and it helps us to kind of shift perspective. And it's like, what really is important? And this is what's so important about compassion and self-compassion, because you get to alleviate your own suffering. Right. Through what you're talking about, realizing, you know, that, well, what are the thoughts? What's the narrative? How am I feeling? What are the experience I'm having within this suffering? You know, the common humanity part, which is huge, you know, realizing, oh, I'm not the only person that's ever done this, nor will I only be the or the person that has experienced this now or in the future. And then like that, you know, motivational mentoring or speaking to yourself in a kind way, but not letting yourself off the hook either. Like such valuable tools.
Right.
But it's a practice. I mean, it really, really is a practice. And I wish more and more people, more schools, more teachers, more men, more groups were like doing these kind of practices, because we can, you know, getting out of that, you know, how I'm showing up, I gotta be this person, that person, which just creates so much suffering, especially that hole of I'm not enough. I'm never going to have enough. I'm not going to be enough, you know, and then we try, show up the next day. In that, with that same mentality, and we just keep like failing, you know, if we will, because we're just not being kind to ourselves. I mean, great stuff. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. An interesting part of all that, there are lots of paradoxes in all this, but an interesting part of that is that a lot of times it's the people with greatest power that are most suffering from this, I think.
Explain.
I think people that are with less power have already had to learn this in a way. Mm-hmm. They had to learn self-compassion in order to get through. And often, you know, here's men talking mindfulness, a woman speaking to this, but I think a lot of times it's the people that have to keep up this image that are most suffering with that I'm not enoughness. And so that, to me, that's part of why I asked y'all if I could come on the show, is because we can learn this. We can have a growth mindset, and we do not have to keep suffering from that self-esteem trap, as you were talking about. We can learn to relate to ourselves in a new way. As I'm thinking about this, I'm always wondering, like, who are men that can serve as role models for this? That's something I go through a lot. And so I've been wondering, like, were the samurai self-compassionate? Mm-hmm. Were ninjas self-compassionate? And I looked them up, and nothing that I saw indicated any kind of self-compassion. It was more about loyalty to the leader. And you know a lot about this, John. That said, I do have a friend, one of my closest friends, when I went through UCLA's mindfulness facilitation program, is a police officer in the Simi Valley outside of LA. And he's often invited into doing mindfulness trainings that maybe others can't get into as a police officer. And one of the women that was the teachers at the place outside of San Francisco.
Elysium?
I'm talking about, Will.
Is that?
No, Jack Kornfield's. Jack Kornfield's place where they have a lot of
trees. Okay, yeah.
Not Omega. That was stuck in my mind. Anyway, it'll come to me. He was going there, and his teacher said, you're here because you are a samurai. So that's where I was hoping there was some teaching on how can the samurai show up for himself as a self-compassionate person? So I'm still looking for that image. If anyone knows out there, please let me know what is an image of a self-compassionate, totally incredible, successful, powerful man? I want to know. But I was looking this up the other day, and Rick Hansen came across.
Oh, I love Rick Hansen.
And Rick Hansen is this awful, awesome, amazing human. He wrote this article in the Chicago Tribune, and I had to get a subscription to be able to read it. So I'm now a subscriber to the Chicago Tribune, though I live in New Mexico. And the article, he cited, I think it was from Oxfam, that there are 8 people who are billionaires, and the amount of money that they make on an annual basis is more than something like us. I want to say 70% of the humans on the planet.
Wow.
And so I decided to look into that a little bit. And so what it turns out, this article was written in 2023. And Rick must have taken that information from somewhere on the internet. I looked up those 8 billionaires, and Forbes keeps a track of our billionaires on the planet. In 2017, there were 8. Today, we have over 2,600 billionaires. So that is 7 years. We've grown the number of billionaires. Where am I going with this? There are 2,600 and some people in this on this planet, the majority who are men, who are making billions of dollars. And the whole of them controls about $13 trillion. Hmm. And that model, though, that model of accumulation and that kind of success, I believe, is so contrary to this notion of how do we show up for ourselves with self-compassion, right?
Right.
Who are our models that we can model ourselves off of, where enough is enough? We can know what enough is, where we can rest and we can have enough for our families and we can give back to society because we care, because we feel suffering in ourselves. We're allowed to feel that. And then we can see suffering in others. So that's sort of a journey that I'm on. How do we build a model, this new world order, where being a self-compassionate human is success?
Right. Right. Well, and living and being with and understanding more like abundance. Like, I mean, if all of these, and I imagine a lot of those wealthy people, they suffer. They suffer off, and they have so much, and they can do so much. They can do anything, and they suffer, and they suffer, and they suffer. And but there's also stories out there of people with, you know, that much wealth starting to change and giving back and getting involved with helping other people, and all of a sudden, like overnight almost, or that first experience, like I feel amazing because you're giving, you're connecting hearts. Instead of it, like, you know, accumulating all that wealth is like, you know, it's almost a scarcity mindset, even though they have so much abundance,
right?
And they suffer because of it, because they're just always trying to get more. Like, it's not enough to have a private jet; now they want a fucking rocket ship. You know what I mean? To go somewhere, which is, I mean, and it's just like, what's the rocket ship? And then what do you want? You know what I mean? Then you want to be invisible, and it's like, oh, and then you want to live forever. And it's just like, and it's like this constant search of like selfishness in some ways. I mean, just maybe it comes back to a lot of that self-esteem. It's like, I need more. I want to show everybody what I got and how things are going, versus like, if you just give back, you know what I mean? And just cause we connect, like, I mean, that's, it's just how we are as human beings. We have these hormones in us, right? That when we alleviate the suffering of somebody or help somebody else in some way, right? We just get this amazing boost of like, wow, this is what humanity is. Because we thrive when we're together. We thrive when we help one another. We thrive when we, you know, I mean, teach from a place of like compassion and love and really trying to help somebody. And I don't know what it's going to take to kind of get away from this as a society, but I think having these conversations is very helpful, and this podcast is very helpful. You know, and so, but it's just we got to keep beating that drum.
Absolutely.
You know, because like, it is also like, I think the three of us here, we're just like, there's like, we're inspired by a mission. You know, this, it's not even like I'm speaking. Yeah. But like, I'm speaking from something that like I've been training for a very long time, but also coming from like a divine sense of for greater of humanity. And it's just like, and once you get on that ride, it's like, what other door, well, you know, other eyes or hearts can I open? Minds can I open? Doors that can open for other people so that they can kind of get into this field of all opportunities and all and happiness. Because like, it's, if you make it about and live passionately for others and serving others, it's amazing what can come. Not even who cares about what comes back. It just does. Cause like, you're kind of, you're in that cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not having a lot of questions today.
I agree. I think a huge part of it is about that being in connection with our own suffering that keeps us
there, you go,
on the path. Yeah. And right, you're talking about giving back, but we give back from that notion that I am humble. I know that I make mistakes. Yeah. I have pain. And you too, as somebody with common humanity, suffer. And maybe I have tons of money, so now I'm going to give, but I'm going to give not because I am better than you. I'm going to give because I know I suffer too. Mm. And from that place of the obstacle is the way, we give, you know. And for me, people who are going to be teachers of mine, I won't respect them unless they're coming from that perspective too. You know, if they've got it all figured out, okay, you're not my teacher. Right. I don't have anything to learn unless you're tapping into your pain too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that, Will and I try to do is we tap into what brought us to this place. Right. And it certainly wasn't, it was not making money like we were discussing before. if we were driven by making money, we would not be running a podcast called Men Talking Mindfulness. Although one day we hope to make some money doing it. So if you're a potential sponsor, why don't you throw some money
at us? I'd want to sponsor the show. Sponsor the show.
but again, that is to further our mission. But I want to come back to, you know, the kind of the title here, how to attain that emotional, mental, and social resilience. But with a little bit of a twist, by not having that emotional resilience, by not having that emotional control, emotional regulation, maybe, how does that weaken us as individuals, weaken us within our own hearts, our minds, and then outside within society? How does that weaken us?
Yeah. So when we don't know how to emotionally regulate, which there isn't a lot that teaches us that, right? Schools are really struggling how to bring this in. Parents, I think, are more and more struggling on how to bring it in. So when we don't know how to emotionally regulate, we become, I like to think of it like a dead branch, right? A piece of wood that's all dried out. Something happens and it creates stress, and that weight of the stress breaks that wood, piece of dried out wood, right? We are brittle because what we do is we react and we make the situation worse because we come at it from aggression, and then there's this downward spiral that begins. But when we learn to emotionally regulate, when we recognize that pattern of, for example, anger, okay, anger's up here. What is it telling me? It's telling me that I have some unmet need. I've got some emotions that are soft there that I don't want to turn towards. And under that, there's this unmet need. And if I practice that, then I have this resilient possibility of responding instead of reacting.
Right.
So then I'm like a nice piece of willow that kind of bends with the wind and can go with things. I've got flexibility. And that's the process of practicing how to respond. Yesterday, I was in a school, International Baccalaureate Public School here in Santa Fe, and I was given the last lesson of a year-long program to some kids on mindful self-compassion. And
beautiful.
The program kept getting interrupted, so I wasn't going to be able to fit in difficult emotions, managing difficult emotions. Like, we gotta shoehorn this in. And so what we were talking about there with the kids, I brought in Ooblik with my assistant.
Oh, yeah.
Ooblik, do you remember that stuff?
It's cornstarch with water. Yeah, stuff that you can walk on or run on. Yeah,
I think it's...
Or you sink in. Yeah, depending on how you...
Yeah.
My kids are obsessed with that stuff.
Right. It's like... Yeah, I guess peanut butter is like that. There are a lot of other substances that are like that. And quicksand is like that. Anyway, the kids were, even though they're, you know, older teens, they were like, wow, this is so cool. I'm having so much fun making it hot, solid, and then watching it melt into a liquid. And the point of that was so that they could remember, how do we deal with our emotions?
Mm.
First of all, we name the emotion. Oh, I'm feeling anxiety. I'm feeling fear. I'm feeling irritation. I'm feeling frustration. That brings our prefrontal cortex to the amygdala. And so we start to calm the amygdala. The next step is,
real quick, Janine,
we feel that emotion in the body.
Do we express that we are feeling it, rather than I am anxious, I am angry, I am, rather than defining ourselves as that? I guess that is that a
beautiful,
an
John,
important distinction?
Yeah.
John's a great student.
As far as I understand, that's wonderful. Yeah, I love that. I think we just say the word anger.
Okay. Anger, name it, containment.
Here, right. Not I am angry, but anger is here, we could say.
Gotcha. Or I am feeling angry, right? I am feeling angry, just the right? Word. So it's a feeling.
Yeah, I'm feeling. Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get to the physical part of it, because then we actually feel it in our body, and our brain is meant to run away from feeling those negative things, all those difficult emotions. We have all kinds of things that we do. For me, I recently realized in the last year or so that I cry to avoid feeling difficult emotions. So when I remember, oh, like the tears are coming, where do I feel it in my body? The tears just dry right up. But I don't think a lot of men do that. They do other things, right, to run away from feeling the difficult emotion is. So we get used to, and each emotion, there are these really cool images. Oh, I'm not going to know how to say this, but the Numanon or something laboratory, and I don't know what university it is, has done these maps of the human body and what our body looks like when overtaken by different emotions. Mm-hmm. So they have certain patterns in bodies. So we could go and find that, or we can just learn, map our own body. Like when I feel angry, I tend to feel it in my belly. I feel it in my arms, my legs, whatever it is. When I feel sadness, it's here, there, whatever. So we get to know what those difficult emotions feel like. And then we go through three more steps. We soften because our muscles tend to either tense or vibrate when we're having those difficult emotions. So again, we just say soften. Soften, and we try to work with those muscles around that. And then we give ourselves that support. We can put a hand over that part of our body that is feeling that tension or that vibrating. Or we can say nice words to ourselves. Oh, there it is again, anger. Yeah, we know you. We got it. Yeah, I know you, anger. In that warm tone of voice. And the third part is we open or allow it to be there rather than trying to get it out of there, get out of here, because what we resist, we persist.
Right.
What we resist persists, right? So we name it to tame it, we feel it to heal it,
and there then
we open to it so that we're not resisting it.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's emotional resilience right there.
Right. Yeah, I'm looking up some of this Numanon emotional mapping I kind of put in. And it's interesting, really. And they even gave
me a graph.
Yeah, I did. I put down map. It didn't really take the map thing very well. But there's also, I do discuss various aspects. Maybe this is the right thing. Never mind. Forget what I'm saying. Right. So, but it did give me a map. So who knows what the fuck I'm looking at? Sorry. Okay. Anyway,
I'll send it to you guys. Thank you.
But like, I mean, that's where it begins, you know, and it's like, really, we all have an opportunity to do this. And we live in such a reactive society now because of technology and, you know, the way that we've been kind of raised, and then we're raising our children and our families and our communities in the same way, kind of reactive way. And we just like take a step back and, you know, realize that, like, you know, we're emotional beings. Like I say it all the time on the show, like we're emotional beings, and like, but we don't have to let, and it's beautiful to have these emotions. It's beautiful to cry and to love and to have all this spectrum of emotions. But, you know, when it continually controls us and we're walking around with, like, you know, all this anger, all this rage, or all this, like, you know, depression, it's like, whoa, like, how's that working for you? You know, and if it's not working for you, then, you know, you can do something about it. Like take Janine's course, you know, or there's a lot of courses out there that could, honestly, that's how all this starts, you know, and we have a meditation course going on right now. We're going to have another one coming up in the summer. And it's just like, talk about a way to get inside and slow down and get to understand your mind, get to understand all these emotions. You know, it has to start somewhere, and it's not just going to happen for you because you're listening to this show, and I'm glad you are, but like, you got to take a step in order to, you know, to
do the work.
Do the work, period. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
And one first step.
Yeah, indeed. Mm-hmm. Just like anything else that's worth it, right? Anything else that is worth it. It takes work. Mm-hmm. It takes taking that first step. I got one more question, and then I'm not sure if Will has any more. But
yeah, there's a couple of comments here from our chat. But go ahead, John.
Yeah, well, with men specifically, and I know you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but what surprises have you seen if any, when you've been working with men in this side of things? I know you talked about that one who was like, "Hey, I don't want anything to do with compassion because that's basically a weakness." But you know, where have you actually been pleasantly surprised in working with men? I haven't been
surprised by us, John.
No,
surprised by us. Sorry, Janine.
I think it comes from this radical responsibility. There's a lot of blaming that goes on. There are all kinds of excuses. Like, I'm a man, I can't feel stuff. I don't feel anything, right? It's a common thing. And when, just little by little, one starts opening up to feeling the emotions again, then not only does it open up the possibility of feeling those negative emotions, but it also opens up the possibility of feeling all these positive emotions. So it's this feedback loop that, yes, I'm going to open to all emotions. And that means I'm actually going to feel more joy, actually feel joy, not like, hey, dude, I got the biggest house on the block and drive the fanciest car and da da da. My wife looks like whatever, but it's like, I am really happy. And maybe you live in the biggest house, but I love driving my fancy car. I feel joy when I'm in that car because I'm starting to learn to feel these emotions. So I guess I see a lot of men that I work with sort of like, oh, well, I can't understand other people because I don't have emotions myself. So therefore, I don't know what's going on with these other people. And that's because whatever, there's a reason for it. It's like, wow, but you're human. You actually can. You just have to train. You know? Right. You've been trained not to. And there is this whole lease on life when you do train to feel the feels.
Yeah. I love it.
And when men do feel the feels, like, because we work with a lot of men, it's like amazing what comes out. Like, I love seeing a man wake up. It's remarkable. And like, you can see their hearts open, their minds open. They begin to, like, all the pressure to be whoever they should be as a man just starts to dissolve. And it gets confusing for them because, like, okay, well, who am I? Right. I mean, we've kind of been there. But then when they continue to practice, the conversation gets better. They get kinder. You know, they stop isolating as much. They're able to, like, connect more meaningfully to other people. It's absolutely beautiful. But it takes that, you know, hopefully it doesn't take a heart attack, you know, for you to wake up, or, you know, the destruction of your marriage for you to wake up. You know, hopefully you get there before any one of those things or something even as devastating happens to you. But it's possible. It's absolutely possible. You got to take the first step. And what's that step going to be? So, yeah.
Well,
right. To me, they're the sexiest men on the planet too. I'll just put that in there.
Yeah, men
who are waking up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Bred Larkin was on the show. She's a yoga teacher that we had on. And she's like, there's nothing more attractive than a man who has a deep sense of his breath. You know, he's like grounded deeply in his breath. Remember that?
I remember that clearly.
We had several comments like, oh, I got a breath. You know, I got to get sexy with my breath. And like, it's awesome. If that's what it takes, fucking do that. Beautiful guy.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Well, hey, Janine, you know, before we get into the closing, for those who have been watching, for those who listen later, for those who want to know more about what it is you do, maybe bring you in to be a coach, to be a teacher.
Yeah.
How can they find you and get a hold of you?
Yeah. Well, I shared with you all, I've got an event coming up, a one-day workshop in early June called The Compassionate Leader. I believe we're all leaders. So if you don't feel like you're a leader, you can still belong. That is geared toward the obstacle is the way. That's one way to begin the journey. I also have a course in mindful self-compassion for coaches coming up. And that will be from June 4th through August 6th, I think it is. And then I have a website, aware.resilient.live.
Oh, wow.
And it's aware and resilient overlapped. the RE and the of the aware and the resilient are
I love
one.
That.
Are united. So, yeah, that's where you can find me.
Very cool. Well, it's been awesome having you here with us today, and we're looking forward to staying in touch and you know furthering this mission. That said, as I mentioned before we hit record, we kind of end this show with a meditation or a grounding practice of some sort, and I know that you are going to run us through a powerful self-compassion meditation, or as you guys also call it, the metta. Meditation. Oh, yeah. So I'd love to turn it over to you, Janine, to run us through that, and then we'll be done. But over to you.
Thank you. And I just want to say before we begin, these phrases that we're going to use are the traditional ones, but you can tailor them to your needs. Whatever you need, you can call in with this sort of practice. So I invite you to put your feet flat on the floor. Close your eyes if you feel comfortable, or focus them on a spot in front of you. Imagine that there is a wire or a string pulling your head up towards the ceiling. Take a couple of deep breaths just to come into your body, noticing where you feel relaxed, where you may be feeling tension right now. And then I invite you to imagine somebody in your life who has been a great mentor to you, somebody that helped you, that you knew had your back, maybe even somebody that doesn't exist, but you could imagine them helping you, maybe Gandalf or Yoda or whoever it might be. And really picture that person or that entity. They have your back. And for a few moments, you're going to give back to them right now. So bring them as clearly into your mind as you possibly can. Maybe even imagining what it would be like to be standing in front of them. Do you smell them? What do they look like? What does it feel like to be near them? And now you're going to direct these phrases towards them. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. And may you live with ease. And we do it again. Really feeling our heart right now, kind of pushing out these words. May you be happy. May you be healthy in body and mind. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you live with ease. And now you can repeat this as many times as you would like, but because of the part of time now, I invite you to imagine somebody you don't know, a neutral person, just somebody on the street, somebody at the gas station, somebody in the grocery store. Maybe somebody you would ignore, but now you're going to offer them these phrases. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Again, we can repeat those as many times as we need. And now we're going to bring ourselves in. You can either bring that internal notion of yourself, or maybe you project an image of who you are in front of yourself. And you offer these phrases from your own heart to your own big ass self. May you be happy. May you be healthy in body and mind. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you live with ease. And you can repeat these phrases as many times as you need. And you can also tailor them to any need you have. anything that's going on in your life that's difficult, you can invite that in. May you be resilient. May you be able to let go of what's difficult for you. Not get too wound up in it. May you be patient. May you accept what is. May you be kind to yourself when you don't do the right thing. And you can repeat these things. The more often that you repeat them, studies show, the more open your heart can be. And now taking a couple of deep breaths, releasing the practice, and being with yourself just as you are in this moment. Thank you. Thank you for your practice.
Thank you for that practice. That was a wonderful.
Your eyes, everybody.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, thank you. I'm cutting you off.
Thank you.
That was wonderful. Thank you. It does really feel good when you drop in like that.
It does.
You know, and speak to yourself in that way.
My pleasure.
So bringing other people, it's like, yeah, thank you.
Well, Janine, this has been great having you on. Thank you again for everything that you've shared with the audience, with our community, with me and Will here. We appreciate you. We appreciate everything that you're doing. And then for our audience, for our community, thanks for tuning in. If you got something out of this show, which again, I know you did, please share it with your family, your friends, your colleagues, whoever you feel needs to hear this. And I believe that's everyone. So thank you for tuning in, and I'll turn it over to Will to wrap it up in a nice
moment.
Thank you.
Yeah, nothing else to say. Well, you know what? I will say, take that. What's that first step going to be? You know, I mean, you want to start, you're not feeling so great right now. You know, you're suffering a lot, like you're beating yourself up too much. You're beating up other people. What's that first step going to be? And you need to make that choice. You know, you're listening to this show for some reason. So let that reason help you and inspire you to take that first step. And if you need some help, connect with any one of us here. We can help you make that first step, or at least put you in the right direction. So
there you go.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Janine, thank you for all your wisdom, everything you've shared today. Really, really loved what you had to say. So thank you so much.
Thank you all. Take care, everyone. Till next time.
Thank you. Thank you, John and Will, for doing what you do.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you walk away with some new tools and insights to guide you on your life journey. New episodes are being published every week, so please join us again for some meaningful discussion. For more information, please check out mentalkingmindfulness.com.